and welcome to Counsel for the State. I'm Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin. Counsel for the State is a podcast produced by my office. Our goal in each episode is to share information with Idaho residents, journalists, and anyone with an interest in state government. Our aim is to increase transparency, further understanding of the office's role in government, and discuss timely legal topics. I hope you enjoy this installment and consider exploring past episodes as well. With that, here is the Office of the Attorney General, Public Information Officer, and Counsel for the State host, Scott Graff.
Hello, and welcome back to Counsel for the State. It's now been more than 2 weeks since Americans went to the polls in an unprecedented election. The hotly contested race for president overshadowed everything else down ballot, but the reality is that Idahoans voted on many important state and local races besides the one for the White House, and they did so in record fashion. And they happened to do so, of course, during a pandemic that forced elections officials to make major changes to the way they provide and count ballots. But despite the unusual circumstances, Idaho's elections appear to have gone very smoothly. Here to discuss this year's vote are two very special guests today. We've got first Chad Houck with the Idaho Secretary of State's office. As the Secretary of State's chief deputy, Chad is integral in the office's role of working with Idaho's county clerks to administrate elections. Chad, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Our second guest is one of those county clerks who worked on the front lines of this year's historic elections. As Ada County's clerk, Phil McGrain oversaw a county election that, among other things, featured huge turnout and an unprecedented demand for absentee ballots. Phil joins us now to discuss those and other aspects of the votes in Idaho's largest county. Phil, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Good to see you, Scott.
You too. Also here for today's discussion is Brian Kane. Brian is co-host of Counsel for the State, and as the Office of the Attorney General's Assistant Chief Deputy, Brian is also one of the attorneys in our office who provides legal counsel to the Secretary of State on election-related issues. Brian, welcome back.
Thank you, Scott. Glad to be here.
All right. And I will start by saying we are, for the first time, recording our podcast in a logistically different way. Brian, I can see, is sitting in his office, Chad in his office, and it looks like Phil is in an office at the elections office as well. I'm at my kitchen counter here running a Zoom call and a digital recorder on the side. So fingers crossed that this goes exactly like I'm hoping it will. So, Phil, I will start a question for you. Like I said, we're a little bit more than 2 weeks out from Election Day at this point. After you have had some time to reflect on how things went, how did they go?
I don't know that I've had enough time to reflect on how things really went. As I was mentioning to you just before, we're having conversations right now in terms of a pending recount that we have here. We had one of the closest races, probably the closest race in the state here for ACHD, Commissioner District Number 2, which was two votes apart out of 30,000. So that'll be interesting. That'll be the test to see how it really went. But right now, by and large, we feel like it went extremely well. This has been such an interesting election, as you noted, with the pandemic and everything going on. The intensity of the presidential election, I noted. And one of the anecdotal ways that I've kind of measured this election is leading up to it. I know in the AG's office, you certainly see this, especially in your role. I got more what I like to call hate mail than normal, where people were angry about a variety of things and let me know how they felt about them. And that was normally, I don't see much of that, but I saw a lot more of it this year just because of the intensity of the election and so much interest, COVID, right? Make sure we had health precautions. But similarly, into my pleasant surprise, is after the election, I've received more thank you cards and postcards and notes from voters, just appreciative of how well it went here. I think, you may have seen from the legislature recently kind of touting how proud they were of Idaho and how it went. And I think that was a lot of the prep work that we did, especially as counties throughout the state, just getting everything in place so that we'd have results on election night.
The only complaint that I could offer is that if you voted absentee, you didn't get an I voted sticker. I feel like that's the only oversight in the process that I could identify.
And Brian brings that up every time we talk together. this election.
To be fair, it depends on how you voted absentee, because I know for a fact that Kootenai County had a roll of a roll of I voted stickers available at their ballot drop-off box, as did Ada County outside of the Ada County Elections Office. So, Brian, if you're still not getting that I voted sticker, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, I guess it was the fact that I dropped it in the mail. Those stickers are coveted, and you know they're a special edition this year.
I'm sure if you went to Phil's office, he can find you an extra.
There's always one wise guy, right, Phil? So, Phil, where do things stand officially with Ada County's vote at this point?
So results are official. We've canvassed our results. We've submitted them to the state, which I don't think has had the opportunity to canvass yet. And so because the race we have for a recount is a local race, that process has now been triggered, and that's why we're working on that piece, most likely anticipating it taking place right after Thanksgiving. But we're kind of working through that. But for the most part, you know, it is one of the most interesting things about elections is, Chad and I were noting on it just before we got on here, is the intensity. There's this huge buildup, just the number of people. I mean, this place was crawling with temporary staff, people coming in to be trained as poll workers, everything else. And then now it's like crickets around here. We do have our election staff still working. We're doing kind of the post-election cleanup work. But most of the people that we had helping us are gone. There aren't voters lined up. The parking lot isn't jam-packed with voters waiting to vote. And so it's kind of interesting to see the buildup and then just the drop that comes afterwards.
So Phil or Chad, maybe you could take a second and help folks understand, what is the difference between the count and the canvass?
So on election night, what we see, we have election night reporting, and that's where people are typically used to thinking the election is for all practical purposes over. That in fact is not the case. The election count that comes in on election night is an unofficial count. Counties have around 10 days afterwards, they finished up their canvass or their audit of their vote basically by the 13th. They then forward that information to us at the state level, and we take a look at all the county numbers, aggregate them all together. Now we're matching it against what we have in our election night reporting system, but keeping in mind that that election night reporting system is an unofficial result. So we continue to go through, we add all those up into different spreadsheets, double check, cross check, make sure all the math adds up. And then and only then do we do what we actually did at 1 o'clock this afternoon, where the state controller, the state treasurer, and the secretary of state as the state canvassing board get together and canvass or make official the final count. And then those numbers are released. We released those numbers about 1:35 this afternoon.
And so Chad, this is the point you can officially exhale now as a secretary of state's office, right?
Well, it's a lot closer. I mean, you still have 20 days for challenges to come against the election, things of that nature, but it starts the clock ticking and it moves us into another phase of the election. It moves us into the official numbers are out, and it lets us start looking at, are there going to be any legal challenges? But it puts one phase to rest, certainly, and it does bring a certain level of calm, but it's not completely over at that point.
Sticking with you, we asked Phil for his sort of analysis on how things went in Ada County statewide, based on all of the variables that were presented to clerks across the state, your office as well. Do you think things went about as well as expected, or perhaps even a little bit better?
You know, I think to echo what Phil has already said, I think they actually went better than we expected. It was an unprecedented election in so many different ways. We were really utilizing our new elections management system, 10X election desk, we call it TED. It was the first time that we've rolled that out with all 44 counties statewide. We did utilize it in August. We had some counties testing it even prior to that. So not the first time we've used it, but the first time all 44 counties have used it statewide in a major election, and it went tremendously well. We had higher absentee turnout numbers than we've ever had in state history. We had higher voter numbers than we've ever had in state history. We had over 87,000 statewide election day registrations that were processed on election day. That's a huge and atypical number for what we would expect to see. So all in all, the 44 counties that run elections in the state of Idaho did a phenomenal job. They really stepped up to the plate across the state in every way possible, and they pulled off a honestly a very miraculous election in a very difficult environment.
Based on COVID, absentee ballots, as you just said, were through the roof. Phil, what percentage of folks in Ada County voted absentee? Do you have that available off the top of your head? And Chad, I'll ask you the same question after Phil on statewide.
Yeah, I don't have exactly. So before Election Day, 55% of registered voters in Ada County had already voted. So that's not just the ones we sent out, but those are the ones we'd already received back by that point. So more than that percentage participated in advance. That includes the early votes where someone came in person and voted early. What we ended up seeing, though, and this just to highlight that those numbers, in 2016, just barely over 25,000 people in Ada County voted absentee. In this election, it was just over 129,000, a five-fold increase in absentee participation this year. And we thought with that huge increase in absentee participation that we would see a decline in early voting in particular. But we once again set a new record for total number of voters who voted early at just over 50,000 on top of this. So by the time you got to the polls on Election Day, a huge portion of our population had already cast a ballot.
So does that change the burden on your election folks then? I mean, is it a different process? And like, how do you deal with that sort of shift?
That was a huge difference in burden in terms of it. And the way I like to describe it is just, we were built for Election Day voting. Our processes, our equipment, our procedures, the totes and the materials, and we still had to run a full Election Day. You know, we just didn't have necessarily the same turnout on Election Day that we would have in the past. We saw this in the primary where we all voted via absentee, where we had to pivot and implement new processes. Our office made some huge upgrades with the assistance of Chad and Secretary of State's office for our equipment. We spent $500,000 on a sorter to help us handle all the absentees coming back and to receive them. It's a pretty impressive piece of equipment that we're now processing thing. This helps us handle the signature verification, make sure we're recording every vote as they come in. And so we really had to kind of gear up. And I think the same thing is worth noting is true is on the outgoing piece. Ada County is large enough that we had built, we had already automated a lot of our processes well before this election for outgoing absentee mail. We just had to lean much more heavily on that. But other counties had to shift because when you see a five-fold increase in absentees through most of the state, those are being hand assembled and stuffed into the envelopes and sent out. And it's just, that's a five-fold increase in terms of the work that has to be done while you're busy also trying to recruit poll workers and do everything else. So there's just way more work in this election, not just because of absentees, but COVID and everything else that came into play.
As Phil said, it's just a completely different structure statewide, not only in Ada County, but on all the other counties as well. Very consistent with the numbers that Phil saw in Ada County. Early and absentee ballots combined in the state of Idaho, 493,719. That represents 56.2% of the total ballots cast in the election. That's monumental. As he said, we were seeing numbers previous to this in the 10, maybe 15% range. So 4 to 5 fold increases in almost every county. You're really running two elections at that point. You're running an election like we ran it back in the primary in May, and then you're running the Election Day event, if you will. Phil's famous for using the analogy of trying to execute 150 weddings all kicking off at the same time with a guest list where everyone's RSVP'd and you have to put them all at the right table. The logistics are tremendous. And that's one of the things that I think the counties have really grown in the last year because of COVID and because of the environment they find themselves in, is they've just gotten significantly better at handling those logistics and adjusting and adapting to the things that were there. It's helped that we had COVID funds available and we've deployed through the Secretary of State's office, as Phil mentioned, we've deployed somewhere in the area of $3.9 million between election security funds and CARES Act COVID funds, almost $3.9 million into the counties across Idaho's 44 counties from the Secretary of State's office just in the last 6 to 9 months.
Now, you guys kind of saw this coming. If I recall correctly, right, the legislature kind of helped you out in addressing this shift in burden. Is that accurate?
That is, Brian. We, as you noted, we had the special legislative session. I think you were there, as I recall. I always think it's interesting about the special session, just that it got a lot of attention for a lot of other reasons not related to the election, but mm-hmm. really at the heart of the special session was the election. The legislation that came out, the majority of the topics discussed were all elections related. But the big change was Senate Bill 1001 that allowed us, gave clerks, and it ties in exactly what Chad was talking about, the assembly of the ballots, the absentees, gave us more time to be able to prepare those absentees from when the ballots are printed to get them out and make sure they're accurate, right? Make sure the right ballot goes to the right person. And then more significant, and we see this now after having watched Pennsylvania and some of the other states, is allowed us additional time on the front end to do the very laborious work of just opening the ballots and scanning them in so that we could have timely results. I mean, I can't, now watching it, and it's interesting, I know when I was working that legislation through the legislature, it was at times a very tough lift to get everybody to see the same challenges that I foresaw coming. But now in hindsight, when everyone sees the rest of the country, everyone's, you know, patting themselves on the back at what a good job we did, because without that legislation, we would have been just like Pennsylvania. It would have probably been here in Ada County. I think it would have taken us into Friday to count all those ballots, just because it's just work. It's not a matter of anything going on. It's just very time consuming to open and scan the ballots. And we were able to do that prior to Election Day and really make it seamless for Ada County voters and throughout the state. I think about a third of the counties ended up taking advantage of that, that extra time to be able to scan ballots and open them.
You know, and that extra time showed when you get to the end of the night and when election results started showing up, we had so many results coming in right at 9 o'clock. Obviously in Idaho, we wait for our northern counties to close their polls and we don't start pushing results until immediately after, but it took all of 40 seconds for the presidential race in Idaho to be called. And then results started coming in. I think we finalized results. We had a pretty significant percentage of results in fairly early because a lot of those absentees were reported as soon as they could be pushed. And then we had results completely finalized by 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. We were one of the first two states in the country to report it 100%, the other one being Hawaii. So, that's a nice, in this election, it's one of the nice feathers in the cap, if you will, for Idaho. And again, the credit and that goes to the clerks that got the job done so quickly.
Sure. How important do you think it is to the system that we have election night results?
I think it's a construct that we've kind of come up with as a result of the media. The elections process is really about the voters. It's not about the candidates themselves. The candidates obviously want to know who won, but they really don't know finally who won until we get to the point, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, until we get past the canvas at the county level, past the canvas at the state level, and they can file any appeals that might exist. So, you know, you've got all those processes in place, then you've got a recount possibility if the race is really tight. So does it really matter there if we have another week or 4 days or 2 days or 3 days? I think we've gotten used to having our answer on election night. And I think the speed that happens is a construct that kind of came out of the media as media calls those races. We won't actually have our presidential electors in the office for another couple of weeks yet, 3 weeks, I think, before we're to that point, middle of December, when those presidential electors will come up here in Idaho, and then we'll send those presidential electoral votes off to DC. At that point, that's when we actually, in the United States, are electing a president. But again, it's something that we've gotten used to. The unofficial marks don't seem to carry as much weight as people might think they do. But at the end of the day, it's still an unofficial result. So
just to add, or I guess echo, it's interesting, just we've set this expectation and it seems the deadline keeps getting sooner. I always feel like it's a small miracle when, if you were to see the number of ballots that we count, so, you know, for us, it was over 260,000 in this election. To see those all stacked up, that's like 8 pallets worth of ballots. That we have to count, and you're not just counting the pieces of paper, but you're actually counting also all the little squares. And we have this expectation of quick results. I listened to a great podcast a couple of years ago about how Ireland runs their elections, where it actually is done by hand, and it happens over a series of weeks, where they do ranked choice voting. And it's just fascinating because they've culturally decided to take that time to do their elections. And I think it produces some interest. It's really a matter of cultural expectations. And here, this election, when you look nationally, there's no question what Chad said, that expectations are very high for quick results, and we can see that playing out.
Phil, I was just going to ask you, are the two legislative changes that were made in the special session over the summer, are they permanent, or were those temporary based on the pandemic?
Temporary. They had turned into a pumpkin on December 31st.
The one that does sustain is the bill that was passed, was it not, Phil?
House Bill 1.
Only be a physical voting location?
Election. Yes.
That one will sustain. That wasn't one of the original ones presented by the counties to the legislature. It was one that was crafted within the session itself, but it did pass into law, and that one did not have a sunset clause on it.
One other thing I wanted to go back and clean up, turnout. Did we set records in Ada County and statewide in terms of voter turnout this year?
Do you want to start with that, Chad?
Because you were really in terms of voter turnout, you know, we looked back at least within this century. So starting at 2000, I mean, even though the century's only been 20 years long at this point, within this century, the highest voter percentage turnout that we had seen was a 77% turnout in around 2008. We're at 81.2 when we look at final numbers today. Again, that's always kind of a hard number to pull because you've got your election day registrants. And in a lot of cases, especially with past history, some of those turnout numbers could be somewhat artificially inflated because election day registrants didn't get entered in for sometimes a month or a month and a half afterwards. So by the time those numbers were calculated, the denominator in that equation wasn't really actually where it needed to be yet. In this case, because of some other things that accelerated, you know, with the use of technology to a degree, plus with a lot of the early voting, we actually have that number where our registered voters up to 1,082,417 total registered voters. That put us at an 81.2% turnout, higher than anything at a percentage level we've ever seen. Total ballots cast at 878,527. That number definitely a new high in terms of total number of ballots cast. There may have been a time back in the early 1900s where the percentages were high because there was only 250,000 registered voters in the state. But at least in modern elections since 2000, this is definitely a new record.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure when you could get free beer and bribes, the election turnout used to be higher at one point in time. But, we're a century or so past that time. In Ada County, it's what's most noteworthy in Ada County, and especially when we think about redistricting coming up, because I think this is going to be a major factor, is our, just like what Chad outlined, our percentage turnout was high, but it wasn't as high as it didn't rise to the level I thought it was going to in terms of overall. It was just above what we saw 4 years ago as a percent turnout. But what was more surprising is we voted over 60,000 more people this election in Ada County. So even with that percentage remaining relatively flat, 60,000 additional people, those 60,000 voters have to fit into some legislative district somewhere. And so I expect with redistricting, that's even more pressure that you're going to see coming out of Ada County, because it's more of a reflection of our growth, not just participation in this election, but we are growing so much faster, really just fast in terms of the country, but faster than the rest of the state. It's going to make it a real challenge when redistricting comes around to how do you address a growing urban area like Ada County, and then what are the implications? And I think that's why we had the constitutional amendment this year for the rest of the state in terms of those districts.
So one of the questions we've had nationally has been over the ability of folks to observe ballots being counted. Is that something that we should be concerned about here in Idaho?
Well, I mean, Idaho statute does preserve the rights of poll watchers and when ballots are being processed. There are procedures and timelines that go along with those rights. It's not just anyone can show up at any time. More and more counties are starting to bring some of that process online, but I think we have good solid statutory provisions for keeping that visibility, especially with poll watchers for candidates, poll watchers for any kind of ballot question that can be, again, that poll watcher is at the poll watching where those ballots are being tabulated in what we call a precinct count, where they're being put into a box and counted there on an electronic tabulator, or also in a central location. Ada County, you guys are streaming, I believe, all of your election space where all that tabulation's going on, that video's online. Some of our smaller counties and more remote locations that don't have that level of internet connectivity maybe aren't doing that. But in those cases, I know poll watchers are certainly up at a much higher level. So I think we've got a pretty good blanket across the state from that regard. Bill.
Yeah, as you know, Chad, we for a decade now, we've been streaming. You can pop on adacountyelections.com right now, no matter when you're listening to this podcast, and you can see our office streaming, even in the middle of the night. I think transparency proves to be huge, and allowing, I think that's where you see the conversation, allowing people to be able to watch the process and what we do. It usually gives people a lot of confidence when they can just see the moving parts, see that people are working, especially if they're waiting for results. We've definitely seen that where people on Twitter and whatnot are watching us as we work. And some of it is just not that interesting. We were just talking about our recount as we come up. And it's going to take, because of the way the recount's going to play out and the number of ballots we have to count for it, it's going to take us about 4 to 5 days of just scanning. And all it is just 8 scanners scanning. And so my press person was asking, trying to prepare for it. And she's like, so it's basically going to be like watching paint dry. And I pointed out, I said, no, you can watch paint dry much faster than it will be for us to sit here and do this. There's a bunch of things. Watching grass grow, paint dry, that will all be more quick than watching our recount. But we have it streaming. This year we added recording of it with some of the legislation that was passed. But I think it helps on what, regardless of the political stripe, people seem to be really confident and have a lot more trust here than you might see in some other parts of the country. And it's because we're pretty open book about how we do things in the state.
So I guess in that regard, how do we protect that, right? How do we protect that confidence that Idaho citizens have in our elections and the election process?
I think one of the things that we want to continue to see at Secretary of State's office is increased voter education about the process. I mean, we are, as a state, we're implementing new technologies all the time. But you hear with this last election, for example, you hear someone talk about Dominion, and there was this, everybody knows Dominion is the name that's been thrown around, and people don't know that Idaho doesn't have any Dominion systems in play. They don't know which step in the process that Dominion system actually played out. They just know that when they went to a polling location, they saw something that was plugged into a wall. So it must mean that we were using the same technology. I think we can do an increased and eventually do a better job of educating the public on what the different stages are within an election. You know, you have your check-in stage, or you have first registration, and there's procedures and processes and checks and balances there. We have the check-in when you get to the polls on election day or when you're processing for absentee. You have the ballot itself, and sometimes in some counties there's some technology involved there, and others there's not. We have ballot on demand printers and ballot marking devices and things of that nature that are used across the state. And then we have the actual counting of the votes in different ways. So there's all these different stages that actually could be broken up and explained a little bit. We're gonna be working on that over the next year or so in the Secretary of State's office, at least at a statewide level.
Were there any security issues across the state of Idaho that you guys are aware of, Chad?
We had, from a security standpoint, we did something new this year that we'd never done before. And it was a success. We were able to bring some information, in fact, to to Phil's attention that he hadn't gotten yet and give him some visibility. We, for the first time, had a situation room set up at the Capitol, and we had agents from several different vendors. We had agents from different agencies here in the state of Idaho, including the Office of Emergency Management, ITS. We had representatives from some of our connectivity vendors from CenturyLink and others. So we had all those folks in a room ready to respond and to give ourselves a better situational awareness of what was going on across the state and across the country, because we were tied into the intelligence community through that network as well. One of the things that came up, for example, in the middle of the day, Ada County had a potential gas leak, pipeline gas leak in the middle of the county. It was because we had overlaid in our awareness map tool that we were prototyping, we'd overlaid all the precinct information from all the different counties. We were able to see that it was only about 3/4 of a mile or so from one of Phil's polling locations. Got in touch with them, let them know that roads were getting shut down, things of that nature. And they were able to reach out and see if it was actually impacting their polling location. That gave us the ability to track everything from weather to traffic closures to power outages, things of that nature. And in the event that something were to happen, or that something even more concerning, if something coordinated were happening across the state or across a region, that would give us the ability to see that. So that situational awareness is something that we've never had at the state level before. Often we're waiting for that information to kind of percolate up through the counties, who are really quite busy handling situations on their own. So that's something that we've never had. Another thing that was huge and different in this year's election, we had 21 counties operating on electronic poll books. And those electronic poll books, through their connectivity, give us a dashboard intelligence that we've never had before in terms of what's going on for voter turnout and what polls are open, what polls are operating, how many folks are coming through those different polls. So we had state level visibility into things that we haven't had before in the past. And again, the more information we have there, the better job we can do in supporting the clerks as they go about what they're trying to do for the day, which is a very complex operation of logistics across the board.
One theme that I continue to hear from both of you is that this was unprecedented in many ways. We've talked about turnout. We've talked about, you know, the shift to absentee ballots. Presumably, we won't have a pandemic next time we have a presidential race in 2024. Big knock on wood there. But do you feel like that this year, in terms of our elections in the state of Idaho, is a bit transformative? That, you know, just what you mentioned there, Chad, you know, we're implementing things that we've never implemented before. We've had vast numbers of people decide they want to vote by mail, vote absentee this year. Will this kind of be looked back upon as sort of a year where elections in our state changed pretty dramatically? Or is this just kind of a blip on the radar and that it's a product of the times?
Yeah, one of the most interesting things that we saw out of this election, it may play in. I think one of the big looming questions are, you kind of alluded to it, is absentees. Will more people vote absentee moving forward now that they've experienced it and the convenience? And I think there will be some degree of that. I think a bigger thing, and it, you could see it play out nationally as well, but was the self-sorting that occurred this election. So anyone who's following along leading up to it, you know, at certain points in the process, the president questioned the Postal Service or the use of absentee ballots. And now that we're looking on the back end, we could actually see those changes in what was taking place. So on our absentees in Ada County, if we look at just the presidential election, the results ended up going 60-40 to Joe Biden in those results for the absentees. But then they flipped 60-40 to President Trump in the early votes, and early voting being a form of in-person voting. I think what was most stark, and this ties into Chad had mentioned our electronic poll book, we have more data at our fingertips now and are monitoring way more things than we ever have before. On election day, it was even more surprising, is it was over 70% Republican on election day. And so one of the things was, it's not just, you know, we talk about big numbers, but how the political parties seem to have sorted themselves out in this election. And why it's fascinating just generally, right, to see how that plays out and who votes where, when. But when you look at Pennsylvania and what has happened in post-election, I shared this with a big group of Republicans recently, is when you're reporting the results, this becomes really significant as well. So for us, because we did all that work in advance, we actually released the absentees first. So looking at Ada County's results early on, they leaned Democratic because that's the results that we started with. And then we slowly added Election Day results in, and you saw it shift. And ultimately, President Trump won Ada County by a very slight margin. We're a very divided, you know, we're one of the most purple areas in the state of Idaho at this point in time. And we saw that in county commission races and a bunch of other local races. And really, when you look at like Pennsylvania, they didn't do legislation like we did to prepare for the election. They just used their standard practices. And so they ended up reporting Election Day results first that leaned towards President Trump, and then slowly adding the absentees. So the shift happened in the opposite direction. And a lot of it had to do with order of operations more than anything else, based on this self-sorting of voters choosing different means in terms of how they were to vote based on the guidelines and recommendations that they felt most comfortable with heading into the election.
Chad, any thoughts on that?
You know, I think as we were talking about, it's just we've got different tools at play. We've got, you know, you have to keep in mind that this election is only, in terms of major elections, it's only the second major election since elections was declared critical infrastructure back in 2016. And that is that designation brought with it so many different concerns. It brought with it so many different new organizations and new agencies at the federal level that we never had before. And it also brought with it funding. It brought with it the Help America Vote Act that came out in 2018, the CARES Act that came out through the EAC this year. It brought along the 2020 HABA grants as well. So there's been this huge focus on elections, and it's allowed states and counties to really innovate and move things forward. So I think what you saw in 2020 was kind of the perfect storm. It was the culmination of projects that were started in 2016, 17, and 18, suddenly coming actually to the forefront and being utilized for the first time, combined with COVID changing the way that people vote, combined with the fact that it was a presidential election year in the middle of a pandemic, combined with the fact that it's one of the more contentious probably presidential races in a while. You add all those things up and it couldn't help but just be a completely unique situation.
So Chad, one of the things you talked about this earlier, but I think it'd be helpful for folks to understand, how exactly does the electoral vote process work? You described it a little bit, but I wonder if you could kind of put a little bit more meat on that bone.
So every, I'll do my best here, and Phil, you can correct me if I miss on any of them, but every state has electoral votes based on the number of senators and the number of congressmen that they have for their state. As a result, Idaho has four. There are some states in the country that have rules that allocate on portion, kind of based on the popular vote. There are other states like Idaho that go with a winner-take-all approach. So in Idaho, if you're the one in the lead and you, even if you win by three votes, you're getting all four electoral votes. Those electors were actually listed on the ballot under the president and vice president names. So those electors, along with the certification of the election today with the canvas, those electors are now selected and ready to move forward. We'll have them come to the Capitol here on, I think it's December 14th, I believe. They'll be here and they will go down and they will cast their presidential electoral ballot, each signing their certificate. Those will get sent off to the National Archives, where they are then added up. And once all those different electoral votes from all the states, that's that 270 to win that we all see on election night. Once those are all added up, that's the actual vote for the president of the United States. It's the Electoral College casting their ballots.
So Idaho's electoral votes are actually cast in the Secretary of State's office in the Capitol building.
They're actually going to be down in the governor's office. We'll gather all of the electors here in the Secretary of State's office, actually in the Secretary's office. He'll give them a quick briefing before we go down. We then proceed across the rotunda into the governor's office, into the signing room, where the secretary will meet with the governor. We go through the formal ceremony, if you will, of all of the certificates being signed. Each elector signs their own individual certificate certifying the result for, in this case, in Idaho, for President Trump. The governor will acknowledge all of those. They'll be packaged up, and then they will be mailed off to the National Archives in D.C.
We're running out of time very quickly, and I could go on. I have a lot of questions I would love to ask you both, but one thing I want to point out is that the three of our offices, the AG's office, the Secretary of State, and Phil, your office as well, teamed up to do a, and county clerks across the state as well, teamed up to do a press release in the days leading up to the election that basically said, folks, be very, very careful where you get your information regarding the vote, regarding elections, regarding the process and whatnot. That was a result of those of you on the front lines, Phil, getting feedback from folks, asking questions, sometimes questions that, you know, weren't based in anything that resembled reality, as I understand it. How concerned as a clerk who dealt with that situation are you going forward with the amount of disinformation that may be out there regarding our voting procedures, not just in Idaho, but across the country?
You know, I think it's a major issue. You know, we touched on it earlier, is just how do we build confidence and trust? When you drop a ballot in a ballot box, you're putting some faith into the system that's going to count that ballot. And we see people want to make sure their votes are counted, I think this year more than ever. And anything, so misinformation being a great example, that erodes that trust really jeopardizes the entire system. And so we want to do everything we can to build up faith. And, you know, Chad noted, just making people aware of how our systems work, what votes are counted, what ones aren't, and why. And so, as you noted, we put out an effort because we were seeing a lot of questions or seeing people intentionally putting out information that just wasn't true. And in an effort to get people riled up, and while it might get them riled up, it really kind of hurts the entire system in terms of people being able to trust their vote. And we see that around the world. I think, you know, we talk about it nationally, but you look at other countries, and we've had people in our office who've worked in elections overseas where the voters who would go in to cast their ballots wouldn't even drop their ballot in the ballot box. They just stomp on the ground because they thought the system was so corrupt and the leaders of those countries were so corrupt. And certainly we pride ourselves in the United States as not being that way. And so we need to do everything we can to safeguard the process, make sure we have the right answers for people, and that people can get answers from trusted sources. I think that was one of the big pushes from your office, is make sure people knew where those sources were and how to get answers, and not to think that Election Day had moved somehow or whatever other rumor they may have heard. What's amazing is it's becoming a bigger portion of the job, being able to address and respond to those things, especially in the age of social media, than we've had to in the past. But hopefully, I think people here in Idaho do have high confidence in our elections and in the systems we have in place. But that's not to say that Chad, our office, other clerks throughout the state, we saw those questions, we had to deal with them along the way. And just hopefully we can continue to fend them off, because when I look at other parts of the country, I really feel for the people in these positions, because it's a tough battle out there.
Final question. I'll ask both of you to weigh in on this one. Phil, you've got the microphone, so feel free to go forward. But I know that based on the responsibilities that each of your offices have, that you will not rest on your laurels based on a successful election for 2020. I think people would say, take a moment, exhale, celebrate your successes. But, you know, what are the things that will keep you up at night over the next few years, or that you feel like must be addressed to make sure that 2024 goes as well as 2020 went?
You know, I think at the moment, the first thing is just, and I think this is true for everyone, is just a collective, can we get through this pandemic successfully? That was one of the major burdens, trying to figure out how to vote people and how to make sure everything was safe, absentees, in-person voting, and get through that. But I think you're right. There's a constant effort to improve the processes, improve access, ensure the integrity and accuracy We keep adding more cameras. We talked about transparency earlier. So we do after action reports where we actually document and work through what went really well, what didn't go well, and we're constantly refining it. It's always amazing to me. This is, you know, once we get through this recount, it's a much needed reprieve for my staff and I, because since the November election a year ago, with the city elections and then a runoff election, the presidential preference primary, and then an all new all primary, we had an August election. We haven't had a break from elections for over a year under trying circumstances. And so there's a need to exhale and then just kind of regroup and say, okay, how did that year go? And what can we do so the next time we face a gauntlet like that, that we're ready for everything that's going to be thrown our way?
Well, and I think that for our listeners, it's important to note that elections is just one part of your duties, right, Phil? I mean, that's... the way that you describe it, it's all encompassing, but that's really only a sliver of what a county clerk has for responsibilities.
As the attorney general, I'm certain that you're acutely aware that elections gets the most attention by far and away, but it's actually one of the smallest divisions of my office. I am the clerk to the district court first and foremost, so all the attorneys know me for something entirely different. And it is, you're constantly juggling everything else. And this year, normally there's kind of a seasonality to everything, budgets and, everything that goes on. This year, it's everything all at once, right? We're contending with jury trials right in the midst of trying to figure out this election. And so it's been a very unique year to be in an office like this.
Chad, I know you've got to run. Real quick, what are, from a statewide office that oversees elections in the state of Idaho, what are the things that the Secretary of State will be working on in the next 4 years?
We're going to continue to invest. We're going to continue to invest from a processes standpoint. We know that Idaho is only going to grow and one of the fastest growing states in the country in terms of folks migrating here because of all the great things that we enjoy, the freedoms that we enjoy here in Idaho. And we know that's not going to slow down. So we're going to continue to invest in processes. We're going to continue to invest in ideas. We've invested significantly in creating a new program at Boise State University in partnership with their computer science and political science departments to create what we call Ensure, the Idaho Election Cybersecurity Center. So we're going to be working on new ideas and new solutions there to make sure that we're keeping elections safe. And then we're going to be continuing to invest in education. We know that it's critical if we're going to have an educated electorate, we've got to help put that education material out there. So we want to continue to open those doors. The transparency that Phil continues to talk about, we've got to make sure that people understand not just what's going on, but why it's going on. It's one thing to see something. It's completely something else to understand what it is you're looking at and why you're looking at it. There was a funny anecdote. We know that the video cameras work because about a year and a half ago, we got a phone call that there was someone just randomly wandering through a ballot area. Well, it turns out that one of the clerks wasn't in their suit and tie that day. They happened to have a sweatshirt on and just kind of wandered in to check on everybody. Someone thought that person looked out of place, called the Secretary of State's office to let us know that there was someone random walking through the camera. We were able to see, that person's really very, very qualified to be where they're standing. Great example that you don't always understand what it is you're looking at on one of those cameras. So we've got to try and keep that up. Just communication. I mean, communication is huge. We've gotten feedback this year from folks that we never got feedback from before. We were able to work with both parties and get election day feedback almost in real time to see complaints and things that were happening out at polling locations and be able to alert clerks to that. So communication, education, and preparing for growth, I think those are the things that we're going to be watching.
With that, we'll wrap it up. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Chad Houck is the Chief Deputy in the Idaho Secretary of State's office. Chad, thanks for spending some time with us on Council for the State.
My pleasure. Thank you, Scott.
Phil McGrain is the Ada County Clerk. Phil, we appreciate your time as well. And I can tell our listeners that booking you, I might as well have been booking a rock star or the governor, or I would get a note saying, okay, he's got this window open. Then I'd respond 45 minutes later and your assistant would say, oh, sorry, that got booked up. So we really, really appreciate it. And I kept you longer than I said I would. So thank you.
No, it was a pleasure, Scott. Thank you for chatting with me.
You bet. And Brian Kane, of course, is the Assistant Chief Deputy here in the Idaho AG's office and the Council for the State co-host as well. Brian, thanks for your time, too.
Thank you, Scott. And thank you to Chad and Phil. I think this is a great episode, and hopefully it helps folks to not just understand the system, but to have confidence in the professionalism and seriousness with which the folks in charge of the system approach it.
A reminder that each episode of Council for the State is available through iTunes and Spotify. You can also listen in by going to the AG's website. Each one of our episodes is archived at ag.idaho.gov. Just look for the word podcast on the AG's homepage in the big blue box, and you'll be able to find this and other episodes as well. Thanks again for being with us.